Geopolitics and Empire is joined once again by Johnny of the Staying Free podcast. This is our, now it's becoming a tradition, our biannual Puerto Vallarta in-person podcast. So how are things going?
Yeah, I'm doing good. All right. Yeah. I mean, there's still more. You know, we could do more. We're only in, what is it, August? So, you know, it's two so far this year.
We could do one every quarter. So, yeah, we're down here at the beach in Mexico. And, you know, maybe to start to get an update with what's new with Johnny's World, the Staying Free podcast world, and so forth.
Yeah, it's all going good. I mean, you know, I think like since we last talked, just been a matter of like continuing having the conversations and, you know, having conversations that are not going to have on the mainstream media, just like having conversations about real things that real people actually care about. I think, you know, as we were talking about before, like I've definitely suffered from a lot more censorship lately. I've had two of my episodes, I think from last time we spoke, which have now been banned from YouTube. The first was with a vaccine injured guy, who's called Alex Mitchell. I don't know if you've heard the name. He's very big in the UK kind of movement for vaccine justice. That one got banned by YouTube, which was kind of very telling about like where their loyalties lie. And then I've had another one since also for kind of similar reasons, but much more casual, just a casual off the cuff mention of the thing. I know I just said the word, but so hopefully this episode will be all right. But battling against that censorship and trying to find ways to navigate around it, you know, but there's always ways to navigate around it. But that's just something that I'm having to deal with a lot more. But, you know, I expected it. It's all part of this game.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, because I think you and I were messaging over the past few weeks where we saw, so Odyssey and Library, right? I've had Jeremy Kaufman, the head of Library, on my TNT radio show last year. He was also running for governor, I think, of New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. He's really funny, cool guy. But the SEC ruled against Library, and they just tweeted they're going to close down Library. So I don't know what that means for Odyssey, but you were making a point like it was a dumb idea. I guess it is a security. It was a dumb idea to create these tokens for Odyssey, and I think any other such platforms, it probably would have been better just to use Bitcoin. And so what are your thoughts on the state of alternative media infrastructure? Because we can't use YouTube anymore. I'm already on one strike. You just said you're on two strikes. There's Rumble. You know, Rumble so far is pretty good. BitChute, Brighteon. I tried YouTube. It just didn't. I couldn't even use it for that. Or no, brand YouTube. That's brand the one. YouTube, yeah. I just didn't work for me. I couldn't even do log in. I don't know what's going on there. There's Rockfin. Twitter now is. I'm uploading these YouTubes for some people might be listening now on Twitter. So what are your thoughts? And Facebook. I've started uploading as well to Facebook. So what are your thoughts on this, on the state of the infrastructure of alternative media and in general, alt media, how it's going?
Yeah, I mean, I think that gap is, there's a lot of different things, as you mentioned, a lot of them there that are actually trying to fill that gap. You know, there is a few different companies trying to do it. And I think that ultimately one is going to succeed. I don't know which one it is yet, but I suspect that it's going to be Rumble. Now, the problem with all of these things is, you know, for instance, with Rumble, they're actually listed on the stock market now, right? So like all they have to do is just continue what they're doing and having open free conversations. And there's every chance that they will either, you know, presumably they'll suffer from some kind of consequences in terms of, you know, their stock price, whether that's that they will just, there's the ESG stuff, you know, will they just give them a poor ESG score? I'm not sure exactly how it will go, but for now, I think that Rumble is a good option. Now, when it comes to the others, like you mentioned, I think that this kind of trend of using these like coins to try to like fund these enterprises is kind of just pointless. Like, you know, if the problem is censorship resistance, if you want censorship resistance with these platforms, just use Bitcoin. Like, you know, it's not that hard to do. You just incorporate that. The problem is they're kind of essentially these quasi securities, which they legitimately are. And, you know, I'm not one to kind of essentially say, oh, well, yeah, the government should be telling everyone what they can and cannot do if they want to have an unregistered securities. You can have a separate debate about whether the nature of having registered versus unregistered securities whether that's a moral or immoral thing, or whether we should accept it. But under the current paradigm, we have this thing, you know, called security laws, and they are in violation of it. And I think unnecessarily so. You know, it's not necessary to have these tokens. Just if you want the censorship resistance, use Bitcoin and then continue everything else as normal. So I don't think that any of these platforms that have a token are going to succeed into the future. In my view, they are all kind of kneecapping themselves to some degree, which is why I think that, you know, my money is on Rumble to be the kind of ultimate winner. But, you know, obviously they'll face their own problems. But more generally, like, it's good to see. We know that there is going to be something that's just going to have to replace this function of YouTube, which is political content, alternative media, all these things. YouTube has shown very clearly that they're unwilling to fulfill that role. So we just need to kind of like figure out which one it's going to be. And, you know, the one which does kind of reign successful in the end, I think is going to be a real, real big winner. Like, it's a huge, huge market.
Riots across Europe, unprecedented food and energy inflation, increasing military conflict around the globe, and a rising digital police state. The fourth turning is here, and so is the Expat Money Summit. The free online event, expatmoneysummit.com, is back and will help you navigate these turbulent times. Featuring dozens of renowned experts such as Dr. Ron Paul, international man Doug Casey, Jim Rogers, and Mark Faber, the summit will reveal how you can reclaim your freedom abroad, reduce your tax bill, protect your wealth, obtain multiple citizenships and residencies, become part of a like-minded global community, and more. Founder of expatmoney.com, Mikhail Thorup, will be your guide on this journey to protect yourself from economic collapse, World War III, authoritarian Western regimes, and Klaus Schwab's Great Reset. Simply go to expatmoneysummit.com and enter your email to reserve a free ticket to the event. Do it now.
Yeah, and BitChute, for example, they don't have any tokens, so they're still trudging along. They're not doing the token stuff. They're kind of like in the vein of Rumble. And Brighteon, Mike Adams' Brighteon, he didn't create his own token. I believe he just incorporated Monero. So I guess he'd be doing something that you think is a good idea, no? By incorporating an existing...
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they incorporate something existing, as long as that existing thing is itself censorship resistant. Now, Monero, like, probably is very, very censorship resistant compared to most of these coins. So I still think that Bitcoin is the gold standard. You know, Monero, like, I will give it a pass, especially because, you know, it's listed on like a lot of different exchanges, etc. So if you want to actually convert that into money, fair enough. Personally, I would rather see them use Bitcoin, because most of the time with Bitcoin, you know, people want to actually keep the money in Bitcoin. You don't need the on and off ramps. If you incorporate something like Monero, great, you've incorporated something that is censorship resistant, but do people want to store their money in Monero? Most of the time, not. Most of the time, people are just using it as a kind of transitionary privacy coin. So eventually you're going to have to try and, you know, get to an on off ramp and convert to something else. So I still think that Bitcoin is the best option, but I have more respect for that than just rolling their own token and kind of trying to print their own money, essentially.
All right, yeah. And maybe now to get to the new world order, the Great Reset, when it comes to all this globalist tyranny. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone knows what's at the top of my mind. And then, you know, I get guests on from different persuasions who, you know, are focused on different issues. And so when it comes to this whole globalist tyranny right now, what are some of the key things on your mind that you're freaked out about, that you're not freaked out about, and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the main thing that I'm kind of concerned about, which has been really, it's kind of remained unchanged, is CBDCs and where everything's going with that. CBDCs and digital identity, which I think are both going to be part of the same thing. So, you know, we can talk about them separately, but I kind of think that one is dependent on the other. We're probably going to need the digital ID before the CBDC. But they will come in some kind of a package. So I think the thing that most concerns me at the moment is they're starting to kind of really hype up this WorldCoin stuff. And I think that WorldCoin is like a real threat, because I think that they've deliberately manufactured consent through everything that OpenAI is doing with ChatGPT. They've kind of manufactured this consent for this company, you know, being, you know, really this futuristic player and stuff. And I think that people who aren't, you know, the way inclined that we are, and who aren't looking at the kind of like the risks of this stuff, they're probably just saying, oh, what a great company. You know, like they've got this this ChatGPT stuff. It's the next revolution. And now they want to do this. Now they want to, you know, scan people's irises and start doing this stuff. I think that some people are just going to trust this company. And, you know, it's not only WorldCoin. I mean, I'm using that as an example, but even everything that Elon Musk is doing. I think that you've got these certain players that are vying for acceptance in the mainstream. And I actually think that they are, you know, just an extension of the deep state. I think that WorldCoin is, I think that Elon Musk is, and I think that Twitter is, and now we're going towards X. And I've started to see that it looks like he's going to start doing some kind of ID verification. I think that will come eventually. I mean, maybe it's not here right now, but I think at some point they're going to make it so that if you want a Twitter, if you want to be Twitter verified, you've got to show your passport, you've got to show your driving license. It's going to start attaching these things to your real identity. So I don't think it's going to happen in one go. I don't think it's like, you know, the government's just going to one day, you know, come around to your house and say, you know, okay, we're taking your fingerprints, your irises, and we're going to give you a digital identity. What's going to happen is that people are going to take these baby steps towards it, like they're doing now, you know, like with Twitter verification. You know, before you could just be on Twitter and you could just use it. Now it's like, okay, well, you give us a bit of information, you know, you give us your phone number, we need two-factor authentication, now you can get it. And then they will kind of keep adding things into that mix. And then over time, before you know it, it's like, you're just used to doing that. Every single service you sign up for, you're used to completely doxing your real identity. And then those things will plug into each other, right? You know, maybe you'll have shared identities. Maybe you'll have a third party service that says, oh, hey, you know, you need all of this real identity verification for Twitter, and you also need it for Facebook, and you also need it for whatever the other thing is, your WorldCoin or whatever, you know, we'll be the third party thing. You can verify with us, and then we'll just link it up to everything. And before you know it, you're starting to kind of just enter this new paradigm when your real identity is just, you know, everyone knows it. Your online activity and your real world identity are kind of inseparable. And at that point, it's just going to be incredibly easy. You know, once the government can just start running algorithms and, you know, to try and find out what this person said online. You were mentioning before that you've had a video on YouTube that you made 2 years ago and that they've just taken it down, right? So like, what's to say that they won't do that with tweets? What's to say that, you know, the government comes in and says, hey, you know, like we know that you know everyone's real identity. We want to know if you've said anything bad about whatever the thing is, whatever the current thing is or was at the time. You know, search your database, find those people. Now we know their real identity. Now we, you know, we can subpoena you and say, sorry, you got to give up their identification. We're going to go around to the house. This sounds like science fiction, but that's, you know, China's doing it right now. And all the sentiment in the West is suggesting that we're going in the exact same direction.
I could see them sending WorldCoin orb eye scanning drones to people's houses. Someone who wants to say, okay, I want my Twitter blue verification, and now you need your eyes scanned, and they deploy a drone to your house outside your window, and it just scans your eye. And yeah, I'd agree with you. I mean, I've been, you know, since 2020 or even earlier, that's why I was looking for people. One of my favorite guests of 2020 was Edwin Black, who coined the phrase algorithm ghetto and casteist society, and he calls it not eugenics, but new genics. And you know, I had Patrick Wood on, I think, 2019. And so for me, this is the big, you know, this is the big boss at the end of the video game is, you know, as you said, CBDC, digital ID. That's it. There's nothing else. Anything else is on the periphery. Even the war stuff. I don't think World War III can be as damaging as this. And so, and I'm not, you know, a lot of people are pretty much coming to the same conclusion. This is the thing. And since you're originally from the UK, I'm curious, I need to have more guests from UK on, but you know, what's going on, you know, in general that's interesting for you in the UK? And also in some ways, doesn't the UK seem to be one of the places that are advancing more in these control systems or no?
I mean, it's difficult to say. I mean, the Bank of England has talked a few times about this thing that they're calling Britcoin, which I think is a very deliberate, they've tried to call it that to try and associate it with what people are thinking about Bitcoin and to try and kind of co-opt that name and maybe co-opt some of the kind of like positive reception that people get from it. But this is essentially just a central bank digital currency. You know, they're always talking about it. They talk about it all the time. You know, the British Parliament, they really think that they're these kind of, you know, tech bros. It's really weird. Like the way they talk about things, it's like they all think that, you know, they're going to usher in this new futuristic future that everyone cares about. And first of all, I don't think anyone believes it. Second of all, they don't actually have the technical competency to do it. And third, it's a dystopia anyway. And sometimes I wonder, like, do they even recognize the dystopia, or are they bought into it? Are they bought into their own bullshit, essentially? But, you know, I think that it's going to happen in the UK. It's just the same as everywhere. I wouldn't say that it's kind of like more or less totalitarian or more or less complete than other CBDCs. It's probably going to come around at a similar time. I mean, just in general, though, about UK politics, like, I just think that it's a mess, honestly. I think that the country has nothing left to offer. And I kind of, you know, I say that with a heavy heart, because obviously, like, you know, I'm not someone who's just, you know, I do care about my country and the direction it's going, but I don't see what's positive anymore in the UK. Like, you know, you've got huge cost of living increases. You've got, you know, so many people like with just huge levels of household debt. You know, when COVID rolled around, we kind of showed that we didn't really care about freedoms either, that even that aspect of the kind of British nature. Okay, fair enough. There was obviously pockets of resistance that I was very like proud of, but like in a general sense, I thought that it was kind of pretty weak. You know, we had some of the longest lockdowns of anywhere. They made some strides in terms of vaccine, kind of proof of vaccination. They did actually try to bring it around. In the end, it was kind of ultimately unsuccessful, but you know, we went there. So yeah, I don't really have much kind of positive hope for the UK. I think that, I mean, my, you know, what I always say about like these kind of Western, like more legacy countries, you know, countries that in my opinion are living off the steam of a prior history, is that the thing that they've all got going for them, or that they did have going for them, was that they had a strong rule of law and that they protected your freedoms, and that you knew that you could have things like fair trial, you knew that you could, you know, have freedom of association, you had free speech, etc. All of that was thrown out of the window when it came to COVID. Everything went out the window, and it, for me, it completely flipped the table. You know, no longer was it kind of a balancing act of, you know, these countries, yes, they're expensive, and yes, they're, you know, not they're less beautiful and they're colder, and you know, in terms of like especially Northern Europe, but then it was completely flipped over, that balance, when they said, well, now we're going to throw out the rule of law and basic freedom, because it's like, well, if the West doesn't have that, like, you're really, really scraping the barrel to find reasons that these countries should be rich and should be successful. So I think that, you know, honestly, a lot of people are, I mean, even people I know, like, are just losing kind of confidence in it. And obviously, like, you know, you could say, well, because I'm doing the podcast and stuff, I have people speaking to me who are already kind of feeling that, that, I guess, pessimism. But it does seem to me like it's definitely stepped up a notch. I think a lot of people are really thinking about the direction of the country and whether it's a good one. And, you know, I just don't see any positivity from anyone on any political side.
That segues well into Mexico. And as you said, you know, it's colder out there in Europe, it's colder, uglier, but at least you had rule of law, and now you don't even have that. And so then, you know, places like Mexico look much nicer, where at least, you know, if you're not going to have rule of law, it's nice to be here, right?
That's exactly right.
And your sentiment as well, you know, there's a really cool guy, a Canadian, his Twitter handle is DeWald, if you're listening, shout out. I think he's Christian as well. He came down to Canada. He's along the same lines as you're talking about UK. He's talking about Canada. I just connected with I think one of his associates, who's another Canadian, he may have even been working in the government, who went down to Ecuador. And they're all just saying Canada has complete, it's dead, it's collapsed. I mentioned this when I was just now on your podcast. I talked to this Canadian professor, Bruce Party, who was saying it's like the end of Western liberal civilization. It's over. It's finished. We are in this managerial state and technocracy. And so, you know, if that's the state of affairs, then we're all going to go to where we feel more comfortable. And it's different for everyone. For some people, it's where they are. You know, maybe it is within the UK, but just going more rural, or mm-hmm. You know, maybe you can find some comfort living within urban globalist cities. But again, it's everyone has their own sort of formula. But then Mexico, you know what, you seem like you're going to continue staying here in Mexico. I am as well. You know, as far as we know, tomorrow anything can happen, and then I can, in a moment's notice, disappear anywhere. But just your further thoughts on Mexico.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I just think that Mexico is just a great country. I just think it's got so much going for it. You know, like, we're obviously both living here now and have kind of like left our home countries, or I guess in your case, your second home country, to come here. And, you know, it's just, I just feel like Mexico has the right attitude towards like so many things. You know, generally people just kind of like mind their own business. People aren't in each other's faces about stuff. The wokeism stuff hasn't really taken off here in the same way. I know that there are kind of small pockets of it, but in general, I don't think people even think about that kind of stuff. People just want to live a good life. You know, it's a nice country. It's a beautiful place. There's huge amounts of land. There's huge amounts of opportunity. You know, I really think that Mexico now, if it continues as it is, you know, being generally quite an easy place to move to as well, like inviting people in, and especially where it's positioned near to Canada and America, and a lot of those people who are now working remotely have come over to Mexico to live and to spend their money. You know, they're earning money in their home country and spending it in Mexico. I mean, that's like bringing people into your country like that. That's like an export economy, right? That's exactly what it does. You know, you're having people bring money into the country, but the money is coming from elsewhere, and Mexico's really capitalized on that. So yeah, I think that I see only kind of like positive things, as long as like nothing changes. Of course, everything can change. And I know that there's been like some states which have kind of gone more down the draconian route. In fact, Jalisco, where we are now, being one of the ones which went more draconian, or at least tried it. They seemed to try it in Guadalajara. It didn't have any effect out here, but I know they've been trying to do smart city like stuff in Guadalajara. But in general, like, I just think in Mexico, it's a completely unruly beast. It would take so long to implement a technocracy here. I mean, I just think that there is a buffer there. You know, it's a country that generally focuses on what is economic rationality. And normally what is economically rational is good for freedom as well. And so, you know, I think that it seems to have a good alignment of those things.
Well, I hope you're right. And maybe we call you gray-pilled. You're gray-pilled and I'm black-pilled. A little less, a few shades less of black. And yeah, I mean, what can I say?
Well, what are you black-pilled on more so than...
No, I'm you know, the possibility of them being able to implement this even in a place like Mexico. But again, these are all just approximations. And, you know, I'm not saying it definitively. I'm just saying it's possible that they could do all of this quickly, mm-hmm. QR codes, CBDCs, WorldCoin, and in places like Mexico, we're seeing in Africa now deploy. But then, you know, anything can go wrong, from natural weather events that knock out. I mean, even it's precarious, even electricity systems, internet systems right now as we speak. So, yeah, it's going to be for them. They also do have an uphill battle, a struggle, I guess, the globalists. And what about the economy in general? Because I know, again, you're a Bitcoiner. You do touch on the economy and finance. What's your take in terms of where we are in the Great Reset? You know, inflation is raging. We're talking about housing prices. It seems like the globalists are, no matter where you go, whether it's Mexico or US or UK, Europe, Croatia, it's almost like the prices of homes are stabilizing and across the board in all these countries at higher and higher prices, like hundreds of thousands of dollars just to own a average home, where, you know, it didn't used to be the case. It's like everyone globally is being priced out of owning property. It just feels that way. And so just your thoughts on the economy, economic collapse, and so forth.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to briefly go back on the last thing, and I'll come to that second point. So, just to slightly counter the point about you know, Mexico and it's going down this technocratic route, I do think that, you know, there's a couple of things that I would say are like kind of key markers for why we could say, like, you know, Mexico is not going down that route. Like, one would be, for instance, the number of the number of people who are actually like unbanked is actually rising in Mexico. So it's, you know, in most places in the world, the number of unbanked is actually going down. So most people are entering the financial system. It's actually going the other way in Mexico. So we're going basically from, I think it went from, it's already very low numbers. I think it was in the low 40s or the high 30% people who actually have a bank account here. And it actually fell over the past kind of 5 or 10 years. So things like that give me a bit of hope. Like the economy is almost becoming more of a cash economy. And then also just things like, you know, you look at like the UK is riddled with things like, you know, cameras, like, you know, you can't go anywhere without, without getting caught on camera. Like here, it's not the case. You know, even when you go into shops and stuff, it's not like there's not cameras everywhere. You don't feel like you're always being watched. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I think, okay, I'm not saying it won't ever get there, but I think it's a much, much longer way off. Like it would, you've got, I think, an extra 10 or 20 years runway here versus the Western world. So I just wanted to like clarify that point. But on the economy thing you're talking about, yeah, I mean, this is inflation, right? This is the world we live in. The world we live in is where, you know, money is just printed out of thin air. And it's a deliberate ploy. It's a deliberate ploy to basically steal people's wealth. That's essentially what it is. You're diluting people's wealth, and the government is able to do it. And they're the, you know, there's something called the Cantillon effect, which is where the government basically being the ones to print the money. When you spend that money, you have the higher value. Like the value is not immediately decreased. The value as it circulates around the economy decreases over time. So it's kind of like if you're playing a game Monopoly and someone slips a 500 out of the bank and then uses that 500, the first time you spend it, it operates just like any 500. Now it's only once it's entered the economy and been passed around a few times, and now all of the 500s and all of the money has slightly gone down, right? So this is the Cantillon effect, like for people who haven't heard it. And this is how our essentially like our money system operates. It's just the government prints money, and then they inject it into the economy, and it causes prices to rise. But for the government's expenditure, it's fine. You know, they get a lot of value out of that. By the time it's reached you, by the time it's been, you know, lent out by the bank or whatever, and it's reached the individual, well, it's just inflated away. It's inflated away as everyone's existing savings, and then the new money that enters the system is also you know, by default inflating at the same time. So this is the system we're under. Like it's, you can protect yourself. You know, luckily there are avenues that people can protect themselves, but people need to actually take like decisive action to do it. And, you know, unfortunately there's a lot of people who, you know, they're living day to day. They don't have actually any real savings to speak of. So they have to use this cash system. You know, for many people, like 80, 90, 100% of their money is actually in cash. It's not in any kinds of savings or investments. You know, other people, they have money in things like the stock market to try and escape inflation, or they have money in precious metals, or they have money in Bitcoin. And that's obviously like a really great thing. The problem is it's kind of a Ponzi scheme. As soon as they stop printing the money, those things collapse as well. And I think that's probably what will happen, is that they will, like right now, for instance, they're, you know, they're increasing interest rates. It's causing like a slow in the market. But if that market continues to slow, it's going to crash everything. Everything's going to come crashing down. All of the house prices are going to come crashing down. And then all of this debt that people are sitting on, generally in the value of their home, but in other things as well, all of this kind of like fake money that doesn't really exist, that only exists in the value of their assets, suddenly just goes away overnight. And when you have that, you have a mass default event. What happens in that situation? I don't think that there's ever been a bubble as big as today. So we don't actually know how that will look. I mean, you know, my most likely scenario for that is just that the government comes around and says, hey, you know, like, I know that you have this mortgage, which is worth, you know, $1 million, and you don't have nearly that much money because the price of the property has now gone down by 80%. So you're in $800,000 worth of debt. Don't worry. You can have, you know, your $200,000, which you actually have paid off. You can have that now. So you can have 20% of your house, and the government has 80%. So now we own 80% of your house, you own 20% of it, and then you can pay us, you know, back over time. Or maybe they'll just keep it like that. Maybe they'll just accept it, and then you have kind of like socialized housing. You know, we've been told time and time again, you'll own nothing and be happy. So we have to kind of genuinely start thinking like, how is that going to look? And I think that perhaps when you have this big crash, that's when they will have the apparatus in place to actually come in and say, okay, here's how we're going to manage the crash. And we're going to manage it in a way that people don't have assets, but people don't own anything, that they rent their home again, that they don't have equity in their home again. That I think is a real risk. But yeah, how it'll play out, I don't know. Do you have ideas?
No, I've been reading exactly what you're just saying. They're doing this, I think, in places in the U.S. where they're offering, they're selling properties where both the government and the buyer co-own the property, some form of socialized. That's, you know, you people can read about it. And, you know, just most recently, John Rubino, who's a friend of the podcast, I read him and others, you know, Adam Taggart of Wealthion, which is a big financial channel, which I view as well. He just did his first Substack, and he was reviewing the summary of these financial giants. I know Jeremy Grantham, I can't remember the name, but basically the point is what you're saying, that we are, the U.S. is going to enter a massive recession unlike anything we've seen in, you know, living memory. So we're, again, all these smart people are saying we are on the cusp of this economic deterioration. You know, we're talking about it, inflation, housing prices just across the board. And, you know, before asking, getting into more of the parallel society stuff and just brainstorming things that we can do to prepare, and Staying Free podcast, I mean, you did dive into a variety of issues, and we've kind of covered for me what are the most important ones. But is there any other for you that's interesting, something that we haven't covered? I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's health and other things, but is there anything else kind of that you've been thinking about now that's, you know, any other interesting topic?
I mean, I guess, like, for me, the thing that I'm thinking about a lot at the moment is just ways of taking back sovereignty. Like, I think that the only solution for the individual to escape this is to ultimately find ways of operating outside of the system. And yeah, I think that, you know, like we've talked about before, I'm a big advocate for Bitcoin. I think that that is the best way of protecting your wealth. And for me, like, we know that everything kind of flows downhill from money. Like, you know, money normally is the essentially the communication medium for value. So, you know, if the money is broken, you need to fix that before you can really fix other things in society. So I think that, you know, Bitcoin, obviously, like precious metals, fit in this category as well, as the best way for people to actually, like, protect their wealth. So I think that finding things outside of the system to actually protect yourself and or obviously, like, your community as well, is just going to be, like, really, really crucial going forward. And you know, I think that's the positive side of this. Like, I think that what sometimes goes amiss in this kind of, you know, like, alternative media kind of freedom community that we, like, find ourselves in, is people talking about the opportunities that are there, you know, because it's easy to talk about things that are all wrong and that are all dark and all the rest of it. But I think that there is always opportunity in there somewhere. And I think that the thing that I'm really optimistic about is that people are actually finally losing faith in these legacy systems. I think that the whole COVID thing, despite all of the wrong and the evil that was involved there, at least it was kind of like a real, like, red pill moment for a lot of people. Maybe some people were, you know, not red pilled at all, and that was their first experience. Some people were kind of semi red pilled, and they, you know, they finally kind of, like, went the full hog. I think that that period was just, like, a really, really telling moment. And so many people kind of saw it for what it was and then said, okay, like, we need to actually start, you know, taking real action, like, finding people who are like-minded, protecting your wealth. Because, you know, once you've realized the government can lie about something like that, it becomes much easier to accept the truth that they're lying about basically everything, you know? Like, we were talking before about, like, kind of global warming and things like this. I mean, I'm somewhat undecided on global warming. I've just never really looked into the topic so much, but I could be completely, I'm completely open-minded now to the idea that, you know, either there is no global warming or that the global warming is happening, but humans are not, you know, the key contributing factor. So whereas before, you probably wouldn't have been able to have that conversation with me. I would have just been like, but you know, we've got all of these meteorologists that are saying this and these climate scientists saying that. And, now that I've seen how that corruption can actually occur, now that I've kind of, like, really, I've borne witness to that, you know, like, we've seen how science can be corrupted under political pressure, and we've seen how this kind of groupthink mentality can take place. So knowing that, I think that gives us the opportunity to actually be like, okay, I know now that that's, that these lies can exist on a systemic level. So therefore, like, how can I actually find the truth and then act upon that truth to like protect my wealth and to stop myself getting caught in this net that they're kind of throwing across the entire globe, essentially. So yeah, I would just like say, you know, I would just encourage people to find out what that is and to just say, okay, what is it? What are the other lies that we're being told? And then kind of like dig into those and to use everything that happened in the past 2-3 years with COVID to use that as a kind of, as fuel for like finding the truth. And actually saying, no, I'm not gonna just go with the easy option of just believing the dogma. I'm actually gonna do my real research into whatever the topic is and come to my own conclusion. I'm not gonna just accept what I'm being told, because hopefully COVID gave people enough of a taste of that to just know, okay, like that's not the path I'm gonna take. So yeah, I think that would be the main thing I would add. But I mean, unless there's anything else you wanted to discuss, I'm always open to chatting about more stuff.
No, just Bitcoin. Since you're a Bitcoiner, I'm not really, because some of that stuff is beyond me. I kind of like more the analog world, but I just thought, because I've been following this for years now, half a decade, I guess. And I know in places like Mexico City, you know, the globalist urban areas. And I'm using that phrase, that's like an academic term. Go back to my guest, Gregory Copley of the Strategic Studies Association. I interviewed him about his book. And that's the technical term. Most urban areas and capitals of any country on the planet are globalist ideology and culture. That's where that stuff comes in first. And then the rural areas are more like traditional and sovereign and stuff like that. And so you'll see Bitcoin, you know, I'll read about Bitcoin ATMs and businesses that accept Bitcoin in places like Mexico City and the big cities, but then everywhere else, it's few and far between. And I just kind of thought that maybe Bitcoin, that it would have been accepted and spread much quicker, but I kind of don't see that. I don't see Bitcoin having been, it's not being really accepted by the masses. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that ultimately it's just really hard to change something as entrenched as the way that people save and spend their money. It's just a very difficult thing. Like most people, you know, they have bills to pay and they say, well, I can only spend my bills in dollars or whatever it is. And therefore they by default save in it. And they still, you know, I think even most people, they still have some vague belief that their money is backed by something, you know, whether that's, yeah, presumably like most people think at some point their money is backed by gold, or if they don't, then they think that there is something at least restricting the number of paper notes that can exist. You know, most people just don't know about money. Like it's not taught to us. It's very much kind of obscured. It's kind of hidden away. But I think that, you know, the more that you learn about money and the way that the economic system works, the less faith you actually have in it. So, you know, Bitcoin, obviously it's not the only path to take if you're worried about that. You know, there is things like precious metals. I personally think, and, you know, I know that people like disagree with me on this and they think that Bitcoin being digital or being kind of non-tangible or whatever, that it's a threat, you know, because it's like, well, it's not a real thing. You can't hold it in your hand. You know, it's all part of this kind of like fake world that's being created. And, you know, I sympathize when people say that, because there is a lot of kind of non-real things that are being taken as real things in the world. There's a lot of kind of deception. But what I would say about Bitcoin is you look at the actual rule set behind it. You look at the way that the consensus works. You know there is a finite amount of it. You know that it is globally decentralized. You know how often the transactions are going to go through. You know how many blocks there's going to be over a certain period of time. You know the issuance of coins. We actually know all of this, and you can literally read the code if you're smart enough to do so. And you can know this with absolute facts, and you can run the software yourself. And you know, you can run your own node, and you're running the rule set, and you are a participant in that. You're not a this is like having a vote in the economic system, essentially. Now, when it comes to obviously like precious metals and things like that, they have their place, and I don't suggest that people should ignore them. But I do think that in this world that we have, where people want to be able to transact, you know, we have technology. People want to be able to send payments on the phone. They want to be able to stream things and make micropayments and stuff. I think all of this desire exists to have some form of digital money. So the question is not, will digital money exist? The question is, will digital money exist as CBDC, being the what people use to transact and save in, or will people actually, you know, go the harder route and use Bitcoin and, you know, not expect an easy ride because the governments aren't going to be on board and the big corporations aren't going to be on board, but actually to kind of go that route and say, we want all of these features which are really useful and good as digital money, but we don't want the drawbacks. We don't want censorship, right? We don't want inflation. We don't want all of these things. So I think if you can have both, if you can have the qualities of gold and silver, the scarcity, but you can have the ease of use, the transaction ability, the verifiability, you know, being able to instantly send it around the world, etc., for very low fees. I think that we shouldn't ignore that opportunity that presents itself. And to go back to what you were saying, like, it's not really been adopted to the degree that, you know, maybe you would hope after X amount of years. Well, I think that with something like changing the entire financial system, when we look at when that's happened historically, when you've had big changes, it actually, you're looking at much, much larger timelines. I mean, Bitcoin has existed since 2009. It's now 2023, right? So it's like, you know, 14 years is actually a very, very small amount of time for something like this. So I expect that it's going to take much more time for people to actually get on board with it and to kind of like start trusting it and recognize that it's got longevity. Because if you're saying, okay, well, take your savings out and put it in something that's only existed 14 years, most people are going to say, well, that's crazy. So I think that we need, you know, over time, there's going to be this increased kind of adoption of Bitcoin. And, you know, it seems to happen in these hype cycles. So every 4 years, you have a like halving in the supply, and normally that, you know, restricts it to a point where it makes the price go up, and then more people get into it because they say, okay, well, it's going up. And then some people drop off and say, okay, well, you know, it went up, but, you know, I'm going to sell. And other people, they keep it. And overall, though, you kind of tend to just get an increased number of people who are involved in it. And something that's happening now, and, you know, we were talking about this before, that's happening in Mexico, is that you've got these circular economies starting to sprout up now. You know, people actually want to use it. They want to spend it. They want to accept it. They don't want to go through exchanges. And this is happening now, like in Mexico, in different parts of the world. Like El Salvador was kind of a pioneer on this. But even that started from a really small community called Bitcoin Beach, or El Zonte. And then it went out from there, and it started getting kind of like, you know, wider and wider attention, and now it's been adopted by a nation state. So a lot has happened. Like, we shouldn't kind of write off things like a nation state adopting Bitcoin. I think that even most Bitcoiners wouldn't have ever expected that to happen this soon. So big things are happening, and, you know, ultimately the main thing is like just educate yourself on it. You know, I don't go out there and just tell people just buy Bitcoin. I say like educate yourself on Bitcoin, learn about it, learn what it is, and how it can actually be a useful tool for sovereignty, like for self-sovereignty in your life, and then buy it if you agree with it, you know. And if you don't, maybe it's not for you. Maybe you know, you're not someone who wants to use that technology. Maybe you would rather just buy the gold, buy the silver. And I don't, you know, kind of chastise people for doing that. But I do think that everyone should at least be asking themselves questions about how to protect their money. Like, that's the first step.
Well, Mr. Bitcoin Bukele wants to end the nation state and create the Central American Union. But anyways, that's a conversation for another time. And then we've sort of covered the waterfront. You know, any final thought for us? And then obviously you're not on YouTube. Pentagon Tube, as I like to call it. Final thoughts, and then let us know. Of course, your links are in the description, but the best place is to follow Staying Free podcast and support it.
Yeah. I mean, on all of the main podcast channels, you can find it. So if you just search the Staying Free podcast, then you're going to find it. It's on, you know, Spotify, Apple, and, you know, all the rest of it, at least for now. At least, you know, I found that podcast platforms, they're very, you know, they're much better with censorship, because I think because it kind of gets essentially like syndicated out to all the different platforms. None of the platforms want to be the one to censor it. You know, it's kind of like a bit of a Mexican standoff, right? If you're the only one to censor it, nobody's going to use your podcast platform. So I do like the way that podcasting works. It is generally more censorship resistant. But yeah, I'm not going to be putting my full episodes on YouTube anymore. I just don't like putting my content on a platform and, you know, YouTube essentially just censoring me. And I just think that the way they treat the content creators is, at some point, you need to kind of walk away from the table. So yeah, I won't be putting there. I'm going to try and keep putting trailers there and then just link through to my main content, just so that at least the people who are following on YouTube, who like to use it to subscribe, they can just click a link and find it on another platform. So I'm going to be building up Rumble as my new video platform, but for now, it might be audio only for a little while I set that up. But yeah, the Staying Free pod, look at the links. I've just done an episode with Havori as well. So we literally just did an episode before this one for my pod. which unfortunately is audio only because the video completely screwed up. But hey, yeah, that was also a good conversation. So check that one out. And yeah, thank you for having me on again.
Always great to chat. Next time I'm in PV or wherever we find ourselves, we'll meet again. And yeah, I'm going to start doing that as well. My most recent podcast has not been uploaded to YouTube. I need to post the trailer, and this episode will not be fully, the full episode won't be on YouTube. It'll just be the trailer. And I did this when they heavily censored me, like 1 or 2 or 3 years ago. I went through a phase where there are a bunch of podcasts. I think maybe a few of my guests were miffed, but I was on strike. I couldn't upload. And so I'm going to try again to urge people to get off of Pentagon Tube. Really, I mean, there's like, I'm on Geopolitics and Empires on 5 alternative video platforms. There's really no excuse if you want to watch the video. It's like, you've got Odyssey, Rumble, Rockfin, Brighteon. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember them. There's one more. BitChute.
Yeah.
Who needs YouTube anymore for video platforms? So
how many episodes are you generally putting out? Because that sounds like a hell of a lot of platform. Like, that's a lot of time spent managing those platforms. Like,
it is a lot of time, which that's why I need donations from people. But it doesn't take that long to upload each episode. Just copy paste the description and upload the video. It's usually not that big a problem. So anyways, Johnny, thanks for being on, and thanks to people listening.
I hope you enjoyed this Geopolitics and Empire podcast. The website is geopoliticsandempire.com, and I encourage you to sign up for the free email list that goes out with each podcast and every weekend with a collection of news headlines. The newsletter and website are our last lines of defense. We're being censored and deplatformed. It's nearly impossible to find Geopolitics and Empire on the Google search engine. We've been blacklisted. YouTube frequently takes down our videos with strikes. Facebook restricts our page. Reddit and Twitter take down posts. And after the Associated Press mentioned Geopolitics and Empire in a 2021 article co-written with NATO, our Patreon account was terminated. Vimeo also terminated our pro account. The best free way to help Geopolitics and Empire is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or elsewhere and subscribe to all of our media channels. You can find the video broadcast now on 5 platforms: Odyssey, Rockfin, Rumble, BitChute, and Brighteon. You can find the audio broadcast on the podcast ecosystem: SoundCloud, Apple, Spotify, and so on. My current favorite social media channels are Twitter and Telegram, but you can also find us on Gab, MeWe, Minds, Float, VK, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Finally, Geopolitics and Empire is in dire need of funding to continue. You can leave a donation, purchase a consultation with the host, or become a member to receive additional benefits. We also produce a weekly broadcast called Dissident Thinker for members and Rockfin subscribers only. We will continue to fight the good fight, come hell or high water. Thank you for listening.